Hello from the Aquarius Casino Resort on the beautiful Colorado River in Laughlin, Nevada. Welcome to our UFO Files show. By the way, this coming year's UFO Congress and Film Festival events are shaping up to be the best ever. It will now be 8 days long, from February 23rd to March 1st, 2008, right here at the Aquarius. This means they have 2 weekend packages available this time, plus the entire 8-day package. Great rates for early registrations. They have 39 speakers all over the world coming to speak, and they expect to announce more speakers. For more information on the UFO Congress, all you have to do is click on the UFO Congress banner on this site or go directly to the UFO Congress website. Boy, do we have a show for you today from the Aquarius and the UFO Congress. We'll be talking with movie and TV producer Paul Davids. He has some thoughts about Roswell and some very interesting things coming up for Paul Davids and the audience. We're talking about him producing a new series on television. Then we have Doreen and John Crane, the parents of UFO mystery man Dan Burrish. Also on the show, Jeff Challender will be here, and he has some recordings, some excerpts from NASA TV that will astound you. Are they out there? I mean, somebody besides us? Then there's the question of the tall whites. Let's get the show underway with Tom Fox. Welcome to the show, Tom. Let's get right to it, Tom. Charles Hall broke the story about the tall whites. Now, you were out in the desert here in Nevada, and you actually saw the tall whites, right?
2 occasions. The first occasion was in 1990. I was playing blackjack at the Tropicana all night long, pretty much. Came out of the bathroom at 3 in the morning, walked over by these stairs, and halfway up the stairs was this skinny person walking in a strange manner, climbing the stairs in a strange manner like he was stuck in mud. And it just caused me to freeze and stare at him. And I was thinking, what a freak. And then I look at the top of the stairs, and there's 3 more just like him, all tall, skinny, and with a hair I've never seen before. This hair was a platinum white. It's the way the light hit it. It shined in a way that I've never seen any human. And all of them wore sunglasses, and all of them had the same kind of hair. And I figured, well, they're albinos, but why is this one walking so strange, climbing the stairs so strangely? And so I froze, and the ones at the top saw me staring at them. The one climbing the stairs turns around and stares at me. Now I feel guilty for staring at somebody that could have had a handicap.
Right.
So it wasn't until 2005, so 15 years later, I hear Charles Hall get interviewed, and he mentions that they play poker. I go back to the Tropicana and find out what was upstairs, because they had remodeled it in 2000.
The poker room or something?
Yeah, it was the poker room was upstairs then. Now it's downstairs. Okay, in 1990 I saw them.
Okay.
But I went back in 2005 to try to talk to people there about this.
What you mean. Okay.
And so back then I wasn't into UFOs. I was into,
didn't
you know,
much about them.
Yeah, no. I had never really seen one.
Strange, 3 tall, skinny albinos.
Yeah. So when a light clicked on in my head, when I heard the interview with Charles, that caused me to go to Indian Springs and camp out on some land. And in 2005, their scout ship, in other words, a spaceship that fits the description of what Charles Hall says is a tall white scout ship, came from the direction
of... Did you see this the first night you were out?
No. It was towards the end of May of 2005, and I'd spent many nights out there, and that was the only sighting I saw of their craft. On another night, I saw them levitating in the distance behind where I was camped.
Now, you say they're levitating.
The people. And I didn't see a ship on that night.
They literally were they horizontal or vertical as they levitate?
Okay, one came down from the ridge top horizontally and landed near the one that was already on the ground. The one on the ground was going around horizontally, it was emitting stronger bright light, and then it would come back down again and just be a normal light. But it was moving really fast and sort of like dancing about in the back. And I watched that for about 10 minutes. And Charles Hall again says that they can levitate.
Now we have Charles Hall scheduled on another program here from Laughlin. And he'll discuss this in great detail. But he did not see them at the Tropicana. Tom, and you did. So let's get back to that scene. The tall whites, extraterrestrials, coming down the stairway from the poker room at the Tropicana. Tell me more about that.
There was probably three at the top of the stairs. They all looked like males to me, yeah. Uh-huh. They had hats, sunglasses.
And the regular clothes. I mean,
yeah, regular clothes.
Yeah.
And I get back to the poker, to the blackjack table, and I tell the dealer, man, I saw something freaky. Those were my words. And he says, oh, what did you see? And I described them, and he goes, yeah. Oh, they're from Spain. And I swear to God to this, and I'll even take a lie detector test. I've even emailed Stanton Friedman about this, and I've tried to do a lot of investigation into this.
All of a sudden now you're a big UFO researcher.
Yeah, I've got the UFO bug big time,
yeah.
And I have seen other sightings besides the talls, but you know, that's just from looking
at the craft themselves.
Yes, yes.
But the calls are the only beings you've seen?
That's correct.
Okay.
But I have had dreams about
grays.
They
didn't speak to you there at the Tropicana? They just looked at you?
No, they just looked at me. That was it. And if I would have known they were aliens, I would have gone up and played poker with them.
You're right. I forgot to ask Charles. Are they good poker players?
Yes. Charles says that they have great eyesight.
I thought he said that in another interview.
Yeah, and they can memorize the scratches on the back sides of the cards.
Wow.
And they could probably beat humans pretty
good.
Oh, man, they would win the poker championship. They'd be rolling in the dough.
Now, the story about the tall whites and Charles Hall infatuated you so much that you actually made contact with Charles, right? And you consider him a credible guy.
100%. I would say so. Very intelligent.
In fact, I guess because of his story, you went out there to Indian Springs or Indian Wells or wherever it is where the tall whites were seen by Charles.
Yeah, well, it's actually Indian Springs. Okay. And in the book, he gave it a fictitious name, Indian Well. He was excited about it.
Yeah.
When he met me in person, he had me tell the whole story eye to eye. And, you know, he was just curious, you know, whether or not I was telling the truth.
You think
and
they're still out there?
Oh, yeah. The ship came from the direction of French Peak because I have the whole... He lays out where their bases are and where their hangars are. And I was actually in Cactus Springs, which is just north of Indian Springs.
You actually live in Nevada now, right?
Yeah. That's
right.
You
live in Pahrump now. Is that a good place to do UFO research?
I think so. The library there has a lot of UFO books, too. I've read them all. Oh, yeah.
Great.
Tom Fox is our guest. And, Tom, interesting story there about the tall whites. You're out there in the desert. Any other UFO sightings? Something you want to tell us about?
Just prior to this, I saw a shape-shifting craft, four dots in the sky were stationary, and all of a sudden they all pulsed a white light around each other, and then in the center materialized a UFO. The black dots basically disappeared, and then in the center was this silverish-looking UFO that flew off to the east. And I took that as an omen to go to the east, which brought me to Pahrump and to Indian Springs.
Is this the first time you've been here at the UFO Congress in Laughlin?
No, I've only been to one other UFO convention at Rachel.
Rachel, a little A&M.
That's correct.
Hey, that's near Area 51. See anything out there, Tom?
Yeah, no, I didn't see anything when I was there. No, I've seen some amber lights recently, about a month ago, in Pahrump. And other than that,
You are a believer now.
Yeah, I'm a believer, and
Don the Clock's got us. I appreciate you coming.
You're quite welcome. Anytime. Yeah.
Okay, thank
great
you
story
much.
About the Tall Whites. Tom Fox, Liz Abram. I'm Jerry Pippin. I'm in Laughlin at the UFO Congress. Don't go away. We have lots more coming right up.
The year was 1970 when Jack Blanchard and Misty Morgan released their first big single hit, Tennessee Birdwalk. For the first time in the history of music, this 45 RPM single becomes available to the public in the form of a mouse pad. Made of high-quality quarter-inch rubber, this fabric-covered 8-inch mouse pad delivers your mouse a very smooth ride. For only $9.95 plus $2.50 shipping and handling, your mouse pad will be rushed via USPS first-class mail. Simply click on the happy little mice and be directed to our ordering page. Hurry while this limited time offer lasts.
In Laughlin, Nevada, during the UFO Congress, and we have Dodie Crane. I really feel like you're a friend of mine for years and years. We met about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, it's been about a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Yeah, this is Doreen Crane, of course, and this is Dan Burrish's mother, and she has a book now. We talked about this book the last time
we were on the air,
but you finally have it out. It's called My Son and an Alien. And it's $17, and you can order it. We have a link on our website if you like, and we have it in our bookstore as well. Pretty good book. You'd never written a book before?
No, first time. Therapy.
Got a lot of you. That's how you look at it, huh?
Therapy. Yes.
Yeah, and I've had a pleasure of meeting John, Dan's father, and they look like each other.
Oh, they're a spitting image. They still are. And if anybody says that is not his dad, God bless him.
Yeah, and John spent a lot of time with Dan. Danny is what you guys call him, right?
Yes, we called him.
When he was working at Area 51, he would come by the house. In fact, I guess he lived at the house a little bit.
Danny lived with us until he was 29 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 29, 30 years old. And now, he used to spend a lot of time with his dad.
And he would tell his dad about some of the things that happened out there. For instance, with J-Rod, the ET, the alien.
Right.
In fact, you had a little diagram you showed me, which is not in the book. I guess at one time the ET literally attacked Danny.
Yes, he did.
But I think they were probably a friendly relationship most of the time, because you told me one time that Dan felt sorry for him.
Yes, Danny felt sorry for him. He said that he was hurting a lot. And Dan, I think, became like a little bit of a friend to him, because he used to like Danny, or when Danny would come in to take the test on him.
Now, when we talked before, and we've talked on the phone many times since then, they communicated by telepathy, if I understand.
Correct. That's the way they did it.
I guess they actually had a pretty good relationship, and they could talk about things, and people, because he was watched all the time, right?
Yes, he was watched, and people would see Danny smiling, and because I guess they would talk to each other, the alien and him, and they'd ask Danny what they were talking about, and Danny would say, "Oh, we weren't talking about anything."
Now, earlier when I was talking to John, I had not realized this before, but evidently Dan didn't really particularly like going out there.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. And every time he came home, he was flagged out. I mean, he was really bad. Tired out, looked washy, and he used to just hate the times that he had somebody behind him with a gun watching him while he was checking the
flight. So literally, while he was there all the time, somebody was armed and had a gun?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They kept an eye on all of them. And I'd like to know where some of them went when they just all of a sudden disappeared out of there, that they were Danny's friends. And the next time Danny went up there, he was told, oh, they died.
Really?
Oh, they're not here anymore.
So basically they...
Basically there's some people missing and some people aren't talking about it from there.
You don't know who the names
no,
are?
No, I don't. No, I don't. I wish I did.
It appears, and you and I talked about this on the interview, that Dan, when he was young, had a UFO experience, maybe even a contact or something happened while he's playing softball or something.
Yes.
And that story's on our website. Yeah. They can go over and hear that if they'd like. Have you ever had any kind of a UFO experience?
All I've seen is one huge UFO on the 605 and the 91 freeway.
In Southern California.
Southern California. Was.
And that was a pretty big one, I take it.
Oh, yes. Everybody, I mean, there was people stopping on the freeway, okay, to look at it. I got home. I had John turn the radio on. It was on the radio once, and then it was, the next day, it was a balloon. There was no damn balloon.
I think John's seen a couple of things, too.
Yeah, he did, too. Yeah, he did.
And, of course, you know, living in Las Vegas, you get an opportunity to see some of these experimental craft before they come out. But a lot of times, like the B-1 and B-2 bomber or whatever, I always thought that was a lot of the UFO sightings, and probably was. Yes. But did your son ever talk to you about ETs and UFO sightings? Was he interested in that before?
Oh, he was interested in it, but not... Danny got interested in this when he was like 7 years old. Mm-hmm. Him and his black kite. That it was. He called it a black kite.
Yeah, and we talked about that on the air. It's probably a black triangle,
yeah.
And that was at softball.
Right, at the park.
Yeah.
It happened at the park.
Now, when you found out, when Danny came home and told you where he had this job, did he tell you Area 51? Or?
Sure did. He told me and his dad that.
And did he say what he was going to be? You didn't know right off the bat he was working with a J-Rod.
No,
ET.
But he told us that he was going to be going to Area 51. And that he was going to go to S4, and that he had signed a contract with the Naval at the age of 18, and we were very upset with him because they grabbed him at UNLV because of the idea that he was only 18 years old, sign up for something like that for life, and his dad wanted to see the paper, and he said, oh, they didn't give me any copies. He said, they just said, you know, it would be on record.
Mm-hmm. We talked in great detail about a lot of it in the last show, but let's talk a little bit about what you wrote in the book. What's in here exactly? This is, as you said, it's good therapy, but where do you pick this? Where do you start the story?
Where do I start the story? The day he was born.
Okay.
And it goes on about his school, and it goes on about what happened to him during school.
Now, the book has illustrations in it.
Some of it, not much. There isn't much in there. There's a few pictures of his aunt, of his grandpa and grandma, and his uncle, his two uncles, his two favorite uncles. I wrote it mainly so hoping that he would get a hold of a copy and read what his past was.
Well, now we're going to maybe be able to see him. We've never met him yet in person. Can I give him one of these books?
You sure can. Be my guest. Give him one. Tell him to please sit down and read it and give us a call. All we want to do is talk with him, see if he's okay, if he needs help.
He seems, you know, as a mystery man because of all these things that have happened. But he had, we talked about his background before and all of that. But I want to, for the listeners that haven't heard the other shows, they can go over here. They're still available. But I want to... go over with you the last time you saw him. That's an. Was he at your house and you didn't think he was Dan? Was that right?
Well, first of all, it was October 5th, 1993.
I know this is painful, so.
Danny came
up. And I apologize to you.
Oh, that's okay. Danny came up, and prior to that, 2 days prior to that, I'd say on the 3rd, there was, Debbie brought this guy up.
Now, that's his wife.
Right. She brought this guy up, and he sat on the Davenport with Danny, saying he was Danny. And they sat there, and Danny wouldn't talk to John, to his dad. He wouldn't talk to me. I thought, there's something wrong here, okay? Something drastically wrong. I go in and I walk in the back of the Davenport. There's no scar in the back of his head.
Danny. What was this, a childhood injury?
It was something that happened to him when he was going to school. Somebody hit him on the back of the head.
Mm-hmm.
It was not Danny. So I didn't see the scar. And it was an identical to Danny. It looked just like Danny, but it didn't act like Danny. The minute she seen that I spotted the fact that this particular it, that's what I called it, did not have that scar.
Did he have Dan's voice?
Never talked, but said, uh-huh, mm-hmm, and that was it. And that was unusual. Then on the 5th...
No, because John says he always came over even for 5 minutes
and
just blabbed away. About anything.
On the 5th, he came back, and he said, she had called me a bitch. I'm going to say what she had called me. She called me a bitch, and she took off being pissed off at the world. She was pregnant and everything. They were over to the house on the 5th. Danny turned around and came back 2 hours later and said, I'm sorry, Mom and Dad, but here's the key to the loan car. We had a loan car for him. We had rented a car for him. And he says, I cannot have it anymore. I can't drive it anymore. That's the last day we've seen him.
Last time you ever saw him.
That's the last time. But two days prior,
when Dan came and gave you the keys, you're pretty sure that was him?
That was Danny. Yeah. That was Danny. 2 days before, that was not Danny. And I don't care what anybody says. If John said...
Now, we talked about the Desert Springs Hospital incident and the needle in the neck.
That was in
how far back?
September. September of
1993. And this event with the man who wasn't Dan was when?
It was in October. Couple of days before.
6 weeks or so.
Yeah. And I don't care who... I don't care what they're trying to pull on me, but don't try and pull and take my son and bring somebody that looks like my son, may act like my son. I'm going to know if he's my son. That was not my son. And a couple of... since we've been back from Maine...
If you saw a video of Dan today... Do you think you could tell if it was really Dan Burrish?
Yes.
Or Dan Crane?
Crane.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I knew I slipped up there.
Dan Crane.
You did. We've got a video on our website you haven't had a chance to see yet.
No.
We'll get you a DVD, and then we'll check back.
Okay.
I'd like to get your impression.
I would like to see that We'll
get that to you. I talked to them the other day, and they said they could get it to you.
Okay.
We'll talk one more time about this later on. I want to get your impression. But my impression is, if this is not Dan Crane, it's not exactly the same guy that you were talking about that was mysterious. In other words, it seems to me, in my conversations with him, that he seems to be more or less... back to the way you described him when in younger years. In other words, he seems to be doing good now.
Doing pretty good now?
Yeah.
Because I know that this guy, this it, I called it it, I'm sorry, but that's what it was to me. I have seen him looking like Danny, what Danny looks like today, across the street from us, and I went to the car, and I said, Danny? And he says, Mrs. Crane, you know better. Now, how do they know my name, these people?
All of that is in this book.
Yeah, I know.
It's all laid out, and people can get this and read the story completely. But I mean, we could talk about it for a long time here, but the point is that you have taken the time to write the book. It's now out, and your version of the story. And, there's lots of things that people say that aren't true about this, that we know is not true. What do you think's going on here?
What's going on is Danny at this point, I'd have to see him to talk to him, and his dad would have to see him to talk to him before I could really say Danny's got his memories back. Danny was shot, had shock treatments. Danny's been beaten up, and I know he has. And Danny is not, I don't think Danny can think for himself.
Now, the shock treatments, do you know about that firsthand?
Yes, I do. That I do know. He had burnt marks on the side of his head. People had seen him. Not me. I did not see him with it, but other people seen him, and they said, they asked us, what was going on with Danny? Who was doing this? And, of course,
was this right after he disappeared or later?
Yeah, he disappeared. Another cruel thing that anybody can do is to go on the Internet and spread lies that he's dead. The way they hurt us with this. I mean, that hurt when we seen it on the Internet that he was dead. And he wasn't dead.
Yeah, we talked about that. You actually heard it on the radio.
John heard it on the radio, and then I went on the Internet at work and found it on the Internet. That hurts. I mean, we came back here from Maine, and I went, you name it, I went to find out if my son was dead. I was looking for him dead, and he was alive. Marcy McDowell, don't tell me anything anymore about her. She's beyond help. She's also the same way as what Deborah was. I don't know where Deborah is. I don't know where Marcy is, and I really don't care. All I want to do is see my son. But they will not allow it. Those two will not allow it for some reason. I don't know why. But, you know, I'm angry about it, yes.
We'll follow up with you after you see the video and find out what your impression is. And maybe one day you'll get to meet him again.
I don't know, but like I said, I don't want to go over. Hey, if I really wanted to, I could go over and try and find him at where he lives, okay? I really could if I wanted to. But I don't want him hurt. That's why I'm not going to where he lives.
Well, that's the reason you're doing the show, I think, now instead of later in the week, because you want to spare a scene, I guess.
I don't want to be seen. I don't want to be seen because once I'm seen, they're going to think it's a fix-up thing and he's the one who's going to pay for it in the end. Or we will at our home. Something else will happen at our home. Do you know how many hang-up phone calls we've gotten in 4 years? In 4 years, I have counted every one of them. I got over 500 hang-up phone calls.
Now, you feel, because when we made this appointment, you wouldn't be specific because you feel you're being listened to all the time.
All the time.
Who do you think's doing that? The government?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so. I mean, if I can tell John something in the house, go down the street and have something happen that I told John, kiddingly, something's going to happen or I'm going to see somebody or something, and it happens. They're picking it up off my phone.
In other words, you've said things that were a little strange. And somebody would mention it.
Right, exactly. And it doesn't take very long where it gets all the way around. And I've had people that I've talked to before, like, I'm not going to mention his name, but all I had to do was say to John before I left the house, well, I won't be gone long, but I know that this person will be talking to Danny behind my back. And it happens just that way. And then they say, we talked to him.
You know, a lot of people think this is all just personal spats.
No, it isn't.
I mean, many people have even told you that to your face.
Yeah, they've told me that.
And
it is not. We had a very good rapport with our son. And up until he got the injection, and that's it. I mean,
it was changed like, immediately after that.
It was like going downhill. Mm-hmm.
They need to read it all, folks. It's in the book, My Son and the Alien, A True Story by Doreen A. Crane. And it's been a pleasure seeing you again. I appreciate you driving all the way down here from Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And the best part, and now you're a wonderful woman, but I've got to meet a chance to meet John.
Yeah.
And he's a spitting image of his son.
Thank you.
I guess it's the other way around.
Thank you.
I enjoyed meeting both of you in person. Enjoyed seeing you again. Thank you very much. This is Jerry Pippin, and we're broadcasting from the UFO Congress. David Sawida.
A retired Air Force colonel once told me that UFOs are more classified than the atomic bomb. More classified than the atomic bomb. Why? Why is anti-gravity and zero-point energy more classified than the atomic bomb? Because the first country, the next country who figures out zero-point energy and anti-gravity is going to be king of airspace on this planet. You know, our F-22s and our fighter wing jets are going to be obsolete technology. I mean, fighters that have to use jet propulsion engines that have to make slow banking turns are not going to be able to perform against UFOs or anti-gravity technology that can stop on a dime and turn right at 90 degrees. They're just not going to be able to maintain themselves in a military sense against this type of technology. So this is why UFO technology is more classified than the atomic bomb. This is why the media laughs at this technology, and they're in on this somehow. They don't want you to know, they don't want me to know, that UFOs have crash-landed in our atmosphere and in our planet, and we have retrieved saucers and we have reverse-engineered the technology. Find out how these things work.
From Here to Andromeda, a four-hour documentary produced by David Sawida that tells the who, the why, the where, and the how of the UFO story. It's only $25 for a four-hour in-depth documentary. Order now from shopjerrypippin.com.